Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad that you joined us on the broadcast today. This actually is our first broadcast in the new year in 2016. And so I'm very happy once again that the Lord has enabled us to be able to come on the airwaves and be able to talk about the subject of truth. That's basically what we talk about as we get together 3 days a week here, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday during this time, in order to talk about the truth. And that's hence the name of the broadcast, of course, Knowing the Truth. And the central truth that we address in most of the things that we talk about is the subject of our wonderful Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, who's the central truth of the gospel message. Hey, by the way, speaking about a brand new year, I just received the monthly download report for our last month of last year, of course, for the month of December. And I was very interested and pleased by what we saw there. We had almost 7,500 downloads of the broadcast last month, with listeners in 50 states and 67 different countries around the world. That's just for the month of December. Overall, I can't remember, I think the number of downloads are approaching 450,000 downloads of the broadcast, with like 11 million page views on the website and so forth. But I was especially pleased with the report this month, or the month from December, was that China once again topped the list of countries that are downloading the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. Germany was next on that list of countries, followed by Canada, the UK, and Australia. Now, what makes me so happy about those numbers is that we have fewer than 100 people, probably a lot fewer than 100 people, attending Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, which is the church that I pastor, and that are the folks that are basically supporting the radio broadcast. So we have fewer than 100 people attending MBBF, and the Lord has allowed us and enabled us to reach hundreds of thousands of people around the globe with the gospel of our wonderful Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And to me, that makes my soul smile when I think about that. This little church in Traveler's Rest is enabled via the technology that God has provided us with and the opportunity here, 50,000-watt station. So we're actually speaking in four states right now on the airwaves, but then also in the audio files online, the downloads that take place around the world as well. So praise the Lord. I'm just so pleased with what the Lord has enabled us to do. And we ask you, we covet your prayers for 2016, that the Lord would enable us to continue this outreach to the world in that year as well. Now, on the broadcast today, I want to talk about that subject of truth again on the broadcast, as we always do. And I want to talk about the subject of arguing for truth. Now, when you hear arguing and you think about talk radio, I know this is no surprise to you, but that's not what I mean when I mention the word arguing. I know that term conjures up in your mind certain images, you know, people shouting back and forth. And, well, that is talk radio most of the time. But shouting back and forth, and you can barely make a point, and, you know, it is just all of this helter-skelter taking place is what it typically conjures up in your mind. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about another meaning of the word argument. I'm talking about a process of reasoning. That's what I mean. You might know it by the term forensics. forensics is the art or the study of argumentation or formal debate. That's what I'm talking about. That's what we need. And I think that there is really, I was going to say that it's a lost art in our society today, and maybe even in our churches today. It's a lost art, but I would say that it's not completely lost. There are pockets of resistance. There are pockets of hope that are out there where debate, formal debate, making your argument, a rhetoric, using rhetoric in order to do that, still have sway among people. And I find that to be very, very encouraging. By the way, on the broadcast today, there'll be a couple of associated broadcasts that I have done that you should be aware of when we talk through the subject today. One is I did an interview with Michael Ferris not long ago on the broadcast. I think this was in October, and he was on the broadcast talking about the subject of religious liberty. You can listen to that broadcast. All of our archives are absolutely free out on our website, and the website is at sermonaudio.com/knowingthetruth. And also I did an interview with Joe Carter, who wrote a book called How to Argue Like Jesus. And he was talking about similar topics as we're talking about today, the idea of argumentation, rhetoric, debate, and so forth, but looking to the Lord Jesus Christ and how he made those arguments as well. So I just point your attention to those. If you want to listen to some associated broadcasts, you can. I saw a news item along this line. This came out in December. But it was the headline said this. It said, Alfred C. Snyder, who promoted healthy debate as just that, he dies at 65 years of age. That was a headline in the New York Times on December 16th, 2015. Now, I don't know much about Alfred Snyder himself other than I understand he was quite a liberal, but he was also quite an evangelist for debate. He was a scholar, the article says, a rhetorician. He was an evangelist who sought to heal the world through debate, and who in the process, he turned Vermont into the argumentative center of the world, it said. In the article, again, it was posted the 16th of December, but it said he died Friday in Burlington, Vermont. He was 65 years old. His death was from complications of pneumonia. And it was announced by the University of Vermont. He was the Edwin W. Lawrence Professor of Forensics and a longtime director of the university debating team. He was considered one of the foremost debating teachers of his era. His era was liberalism. His era was another thing altogether. But Professor Snyder, he was known for his florid shirts, his ardor for argument, and his nickname, which was Tuna. And it doesn't explain where that nickname came from, but he was renowned the worldwide over as a coach and a judge of debating competitions and workshops. So again, the article goes on from there, but that subject about argumentation, debate, forensics, and arguing for truth, that's what I want to talk about on the program here today. Now, I've got a couple of guests in the studio here that are going to help me to talk about this subject. I have both Julie and Claire Atwood with me in the studio today. That's a mother and daughter team. Julie had homeschooled Claire, and she now is a businesswoman. And so, Julie, welcome to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Claire, her daughter, is here as well, and Claire was homeschooled. Claire also participated in forensics for a number of years at a competition level. We're going to talk about that, but now she's a sophomore at Patrick Henry College, which is located, I think, in Virginia, just about an hour outside of D.C., I think, somewhere there.
Yeah.
And Claire, it's a pleasure to have you on the broadcast as well.
Thank you for having me here. It's wonderful to be here.
Excellent. Good to have the both of you. So let's talk about this subject, and I want to do so around a couple of websites. I want to make sure that I give people these websites right off the bat, but the one website that I want our listeners to make sure that they take note of, it's the National Christian Forensics and Communications Association. That's the National Christian Forensics and Communication Association. Of course, there's an acronym. You know, I use more acronyms on this broadcast than anything else. I'm going to write a book about acronyms. But anyways, the acronym for this particular organization is NCFCA. That's NCFCA. We'll probably make mention of this by that acronym during the broadcast. So their website is ncfca.org. You're going to want to know that by the end of the broadcast. And the second website that I want to make sure that you're aware of is Patrick Henry College. They very wisely made a very short acronym, and theirs is very simply phc.edu. That's phc.edu. And we'll make reference to both of these two organizations throughout our conversation today. Okay, Julie, let me start with you. I wanted to have you tell me a little bit about what was your introduction to, I'm going to bring the acronym right here before me again, your introduction to NCFCA. I would guess that it was you were introduced to that through homeschooling, but I may be wrong about that, so correct me if I'm wrong. Tell us about your introduction to it, and then give us a little bit of some information about what is NCFCA for our listening audience. Talk to us like we've never heard of it before and give us a little bit of an introduction.
Okay. Well, when Claire was going into the seventh grade, we had started homeschooling actually in sixth grade. Mm-hmm. And so I was always on the lookout for activities and events that might be of interest to us. And as it happened, I was a member of an online homeschool information loop. Mm-hmm. And so events and activities would always come across that loop. And one spring, I saw an event called the NCFCA National Championship, which moves around the country every year. But this particular year, it was being hosted by Bob Jones University right here in Greenville. Mm. And I really didn't know much about it, but it seemed like a good activity to check out because it talked about the fact that these students were the cream of the crop, basically, from a national homeschool perspective on communication skills, and everybody needs good communication skills. Mm-hmm. So I took Claire on a little bit of a field trip one day, and we went to this national tournament, walked in to find almost a campus-wide event going on because students had come from all 50 states, and these are kids who had been competing all through the spring semester who were now coming, and they were just the top in each of the categories of speech and debate. And you couldn't get very far into the event without being asked if you might want to watch a round or if you might want to judge a round. And I was a bit like a deer in the headlights, not knowing what to expect. Mm-hmm. And I said, sure. So Claire came along with me. We went up and got a ballot because everyone takes a ballot in as a judge, and proceeded to watch a round that in some ways what they were talking about, because as I remember, it was about immigration that year. Mm-hmm. And I heard a round on H-1 visas, which I didn't know a whole lot about at the time. And the round and the way it progressed, it was a team policy debate round. So there were two students arguing for and two students arguing against a particular case that they developed over the course of the spring semester. And in some ways, I felt as though I was observing a round that was way over my head, because some of the statistics and the facts that they argued were new to me. Mm-hmm. But in other ways, it was about communication, and it was about making an argument for a case, whether I knew the facts or didn't know the facts. And that was something I was capable of observing and coming up with a decision on. By the end of that round, I was thoroughly convinced that this was a skill that I thought would be advantageous in any future endeavors for Claire. Mm-hmm. And so, like a good mom, I really strongly encourage Claire to pursue a debate class, which we found available in our area. And the rest kind of was history. We went to this debate class that was offered in our area, which then led into joining the club for a semester because I said we had to finish what we started, and she had to put to use the skills that she'd learned that semester. And she participated in a novice tournament through the club, and then we went to a qualifier in Colombia, and after that, I quit dragging her, and she started dragging me, and and we spent the next 5 years involved with the NCFCA and local forensics.
Excellent. Are you still involved with the NCFCA as well?
I am not. It is a high school event. Kids can start competing at age 13, and then they have until they graduate from high school, and then they have to move on. I think that my involvement now is doing just this, trying to share the fruit of it with other homeschool parents, because it's the blessings still have a ripple effect in our lives.
That's excellent. That's exactly what I wanted to talk about, some of that fruit of this, you know, why people should be involved in and care about this subject. From a preacher's standpoint, the idea of communication is, you know, vitally important. We used to think about it in seminary that in respect to food, that when you go to a restaurant, they may be able to, you know, they don't just take the raw items out of the fridge and then put it on a plate and then just set it before you. They present it, you know, they deliver it in a certain way, and the presentation of the food and so forth is very important. Well, that was kind of the delivery of the sermon. You don't just, you know, drop the information on people, but you have to do the work of putting it together and hopefully in coherent thoughts, and then presenting those thoughts in a way that people find, you know, able to receive what you're trying to say about that subject. So it's very important, and I don't do a very good job of that by myself, but I know when somebody does do a good job. That's the point I'm at now. I can at least say that was good, and I'm getting to the point now of saying I think I know why that was good. And then hopefully someday I'll get to the point where I can say, well, I can actually do that now. But it's a work of art when somebody puts together a speech or a debate or an argument in a way like that. Like, you know, we've had people in the past that were able to do that, or Ronald Reagan or Margaret Thatcher or even further back than Winston Churchill or somebody. It is, it's just beautiful. I mean, it's a work of art when it all comes together the right way. Well, Claire, let me ask you now, 4 years involved in this. What did you think? We heard from your mom about her perspective of going there, of course, that this would be something that would benefit you just as maturing as a young lady and so forth. Irregardless of what you were going to do later on, this would certainly reap benefit in your life. What were you thinking when you first saw this? Was it a bit intimidating?
It was very intimidating. When we first went to the round at Bob Jones University, I was a seventh grader who, although I certainly loved to argue with my family about, you know, whatever was happening politically, I was still very much an introvert who wasn't interested in public speaking. And so my mom, as she said, had to drag me to debate class, and then she had to drag me to debate club, and she had to drag me to the first tournament. But by then, I was starting to develop friendships, and I was starting to actually get into what we are arguing about. The resolution that year was on United States environmental policy. And so I was starting to develop a case with my partner and get excited about it. And once I went to that first tournament and had 6 preliminary rounds, and then actually advanced to the first out round, octafinals, I was thoroughly hooked on it. And that began basically going to about 5 to 7 tournaments every spring semester for the next 5 years of high school, because it was something that became really my main extracurricular. It became the place where all of my really great friendships were, and it became a place where I could think intellectually, think critically about current events, and be able to actually provide my opinion on those events, being able to look at what everybody else was saying and then say, here's what I think, and to be able to actually present that to an audience. Mm-hmm. And that was an incredible opportunity. And the skills that I gained from that, I know I still apply in so many different ways, both in my personal life, in my academic life, and in college and looking towards a career.
Hmm. There's different elements of this. One, I could tell from watching some of the presentations that there must be a tremendous amount of research that mm-hmm. goes into this subject. So I think the ones that are online on their website, on the NCFCA website, they're about 10 minutes long. But mm-hmm. I bet you that there was hundreds of hours of research and memorization and study that went into that. Did you enjoy that part a lot? Like, I enjoy the research into God's Word before I present it on Sunday morning. I love those moments and deep in the research of God's Word. Do you like that part, or did you like the final presentation where you got to finally tell people all that you had learned and what your view of this was?
Personally, I always enjoyed the final presentation. I always found that part the most fun. On the other hand, I had plenty of friends who were absolute research buffs, and they would spend months on end researching. Mm. Each year, for both types of debate, the resolution comes out at the beginning of the summer. And there were some students who would immediately begin researching. And that process continued on throughout the fall and throughout the winter into the spring. And so beginning in January or February, we would start having tournaments. But in the process, we wrote briefs. And so for both the affirmative side, for the case that you created, and then also for the negative side and going against whatever case you might randomly hit, you had to be prepared. And so as 14-year-olds, as 15-year-olds, we were researching, we were reading Heritage Foundation, we were looking up what Cato was saying, we were reading all sorts of scholarly articles, scholarly journals, and formulating our thoughts and formulating our cases based on that evidence. And so one of the huge benefits of forensics, particularly team policy debate, is actually understanding here's what the professionals say, here's what the experts in the field say, and how am I going to compile all of these different thoughts into a compelling case, into a compelling argument that then I can present to somebody like my mom that isn't an expert on immigration policy, but she's going to be the one that's having to make this decision in that round. And so the better of research you were and the more evidence you had certainly was going to benefit you in the round, because obviously you want to have a case that is well supported, well thought out, and researching very much helped with that. And even now in college, I know that the research skills that I gained throughout high school, even if I wasn't the biggest fan of researching, have certainly helped me, that I was well prepared going into freshman year to write research papers because I knew how to research, I knew how to find things online, I knew how to go through books and be able to combine those into a compelling argument.
Now, with NCFCA, they have a couple of different types of debate, right? And then there's a couple of a number of different ways that they present their speeches. Tell us about a couple of those different ways.
Sure. Well, in NCFCA, there are two types of debate. The first one is team policy debate, which I did for 4 years. Team policy debate is a two-person on two-person debate. So you have your partner, and then you will hit another team. And there is the affirmative side and the negative side. And team policy largely focuses on policy. Each year, there's a different resolution. So in past years, we spent an entire year talking about U.S. policy towards Russia. We spent an entire year talking about reforming the United Nations. Another year, we talked about the federal criminal justice system. So very much talking about real-world problems and real-world solutions that would parallel what policymakers are actually doing in the real world. The other form of debate, which I did my senior year, is Lincoln-Douglas debate. And Lincoln-Douglas debate is not so much about the policy, but more so about the values that undergird the policies. And so it's basically a clash of values, a clash of ideas, a clash of morals. The year I debated Lincoln-Douglas debate, it was basically when in conflict, looking at national security versus freedom of the press, and which one of those are you going to value more? In past years, we talked about in the pursuit of in the pursuit of justice, is due process more important or is the discovery of fact more important? In pursuit of excellence, competition versus cooperation. And so you're talking about these values and you're talking philosophically and you're bringing in different philosophers and different great thinkers, but you're also bringing in lots of different examples and different case studies and basically kind of combining all these different ways of looking at the values that are very much underneath all the decisions that we make in the real world. So those are the two types of debate. And then there are a variety of speeches. There are a few different categories of speeches. You have limited preparation speeches. And in limited preparation, you have extemporaneous, which deals with current events. You have impromptu, which is basically any sort of topics. You have 2 minutes to prepare on a random topic you were just given, and then you talk about it for 5 minutes. And then you have apologetics, which is basically apologetics that high schoolers are preparing. There's over, I think, 70 number of questions that you are prepared to answer, and then you give a speech on that. So those are limited preparation. Those are the speeches that I was most involved in, that I most enjoyed, giving a new speech every single time I came into the round.
Extemporaneous was the word I was looking for on Sunday when I crowdsourced in the middle of the sermon the word that I wanted. Somebody said spontaneous. Yeah. I said, I'll take that.
Uh-huh.
But I wanted impromptu or extemporaneous is what I was looking for.
Well, that's a side point.
The people at Mountain Bridge.
So there's limited prep, and then there is platform speeches. And platform speeches, probably the most popular, are there's persuasive, there's informative, there's biographical narrative, there's illustrated oratory. And in those, they are 10-minute speeches that you write out beforehand, and you memorize a 10-minute speech. And it can be on any number of things. Some people, for persuasive, they talk about the Constitution. They talk about patriotism. Other people will give a biographical narrative on somebody that has moved them, on somebody that has inspired them. And so it's being able to persuasively put together a speech and deliver it. And then there's also interpretive speeches. So in interpretation, it's very much for the actors, for more so the extroverted people that like to have kind of to be dramatic or to be funny. And so in that you have humorous interpretation, you have duo interpretation, which is two people, open interpretation. And those are also 10-minute speeches in which you pick a work, whether that be a piece of literature or a play, and you act it out. And so it's sort of like you're on the stage and you're doing this. But what's so cool about it is that it's done without any props, it's done without any costumes, and so it's entirely based on your voice, on your intonation, on your ability to do voices, accents, your movement, working with another person if you're doing a duo interpretation. And so what's so cool about the three different categories of speech and the two different types of debate is they're all public speaking and they're all types of forensics, but they really touch on different people's gifts and different people's talents and being able to draw things out of people and teach skills in so many different ways that it really stretches you to be a very well-rounded communicator. It's not like you're just doing policy debate, but at the same time, in the next hour at a tournament, you're going and you're doing a monologue, or you're doing a funny skit, or you're going to talk about a current event that's happening in Europe. And so you come into the tournament and you leave the tournament just being so well-rounded in communication and in so many different ideas and how to best express those ideas in a variety of ways.
There's some really good examples of those out on the NCFCA website. I watched a couple of those last night. It was very good, very entertaining. And one of a couple there that were doing that type that you were just describing, the interpretive. And but it was excellent. And all from memory, as you were saying, and no props, just using their body language, expressions, and so forth. And, wow, it's well worth watching.
Yeah.
If you want to go there to check out what we're talking about, the website, again, is ncfca.org. That's the National Christian Forensics and Communication Association. And you can go out there and watch some of these 10-minute videos that we were just talking about a few moments ago. Again, my guests here in the studio are Julie and Claire Atwood, and we're talking about the subject of arguing for truth. We're talking about communication. We're talking about the idea of forensics, which is the art and study of argumentation and formal debate. We're going to talk more about that when we come back from the break, and I'll give you a couple of websites then as well. Stay tuned. You don't want to miss it.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Well, welcome back into the second half of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. Basically, today we're arguing on the Knowing the Truth radio program, but arguing in the right sense of that word, you know, a process of reasoning and talking about forensics, you know, the art and the study of argumentation or formal debate. And we're doing that with two guests in the studio today. Julie and Claire Atwood have joined me in order to talk about this subject. And Claire is actually a sophomore at Patrick Henry College, and she also took forensics and was part of what's called the National Christian Forensics and Communication Association. She participated in their events for 4 years about giving different presentations on all different subjects. I can't rehash everything that we talked about in the opening part of the broadcast, but let me just tell you their website again so that you can go there to get some information about this group, especially for homeschoolers. Go there. There is a local chapter. We'll talk about that before the end of the broadcast today, and we'll give you some more information about how you can get involved. I know that there's a lot of homeschoolers that listen to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast, and I actually had the pleasure of speaking at one of the commencement services for a rather large homeschooling group here in the area, so I know that many of those folks came up and said they listened to the broadcast on a regular basis. We have a lot of homeschoolers in the church that I pastor as well, and so I think some of them, after hearing the broadcast today, might be more interested in this as well. That website, again, is ncfca.org, and you can go there to find out all the information about how you can get involved in this, the National Christian Forensic and Communication Association. Now, with that, I want you to hear just a little bit of one of the presentations. So we couldn't put Claire on the spot here to do one of these. I didn't think that was fair to her. So I wanted you to hear one of the other ones that's out on the website. We'll go ahead and play just a couple minutes of that. This is an informative speaking event, and so she's just giving you information, and yeah, I think it'll speak for itself. We won't be able to listen to it all, but I'll just give you a little bit of a taste of what this is like.
Out of control spending. Politicians retreating on their promises. Lost credibility abroad. Sounds like the United States today, does it not? It also represents Great Britain in the 1970s, when this once dominant nation was swiftly fading. Onto this dismal scene marched an undaunted, passionate lady, determined to restore Great Britain. Was it too far gone, as feared? Or could Margaret Thatcher revive her beloved homeland? We present-day Americans can become easily disheartened, facing congressional deadlock and economic hardship. Yet we can find inspiration by looking back only a few decades to Margaret Thatcher, a unique politician who has become my hero for the way she stuck to often unpopular conservative principles to make Great Britain great again. Today we will explore Great Britain's condition before Margaret Thatcher became prime minister, her core convictions, and how Great Britain radically changed under her direction. Ultimately, when we feel discouraged about the evils we see around us today, Thatcher's life can remind us of the power one person has to spark significant change in those around them, or in an entire nation. The Wall Street Journal, a source for general information in this speech, reveals the condition of Britain as it entered the 1970s. Since World War II, Britons had seen their empire vanish, their standing deteriorate, their credit expire. Although Conservative Party politician Edward Heath was elected prime minister in 1970 on promises to implement free market economic programs, The Economist magazine notes he was forced into U-turns when unemployment soared. The government spent so much trying to tame unemployment that inflation rose to more than 6 times the United States inflation rate at the height of the Great Recession, and citizens began hoarding food in desperation. Great Britain lurched from crisis to crisis, prompting the prime minister to declare a state of emergency 5 times, a record for any peacetime leader. In 1975, Henry Kissinger lamented to President Gerald Ford, "Britain is a tragedy. It has sunk to begging, borrowing, stealing." The moderately liberal Labor Party took over and implemented a wage cap, sparking strikes throughout the nation in 1979, the notorious Winter of Discontent.
Okay, I just wanted you to hear a little bit of one of the presentations. That was one that was done by a young lady by the name of Emily Helper. And Hepler. And Emily is giving a presentation there, obviously talking about Margaret Thatcher. And so she's laying out from memory. There's no notes. From memory, she's going through and quoting from like the Wall Street Journal there and other news sources, as well as quoting what people said and so forth. It's quite remarkable. That's just one example. There's many others out there. Claire was telling us about the different types of speeches that are given, biographical narratives and illustrated oratory and informative speaking, which is what Emily was doing there, persuasive speaking. There's also different types of interpretive speeches as well, biblical presentations, dual interpretations, open interpretation, original interpretation, apologetics are on another level, some limited preparation speeches and so forth. So it's quite involved. With all that, Claire, which one did you gravitate towards? What did you like the most?
I did, over the course of my time doing speech, I did impromptu and extemporaneous with a couple of years doing persuasive. I always enjoyed the limited preparation speeches just because they were exciting and because every single round I was giving a new speech, and I really enjoyed that. Extemporaneous was probably my favorite because it was dealing with current events. So extemporaneous actually did involve a lot of preparation beforehand. We had extemporaneous clubs in which you would basically have an assigned news source. So for my years in extemporaneous, I had The Economist, and I worked with about 10 to 12 other students that all had their own sources, whether that be The New York Times or CNN or The Wall Street Journal. And we would print off hundreds of articles before every single tournament, and we would file them all. We'd have domestic, we'd have international, we'd have economic. And then you would go into a round and you would have 30 minutes of preparation to prepare a 7-minute speech on a question you were given. And so that question could be on the presidential election. It could be on ISIS. It could be on the Eurozone crisis. It could be on whatever. And you were to go through all of your sources and compile an extemporaneous speech giving your answer to the question. And it was such a cool opportunity because, of course, I would know about different things, but I would also get a question and say, oh, no, I know nothing about this. But then I would discover, oh, thankfully, I have a couple of articles on this and I would learn about it. And then I would then tell the judges about it and provide my analysis of the situation. And that was a very exciting form of speech. I think it felt very smart. I felt intelligent doing it. And it was also fun to learn more so about the current events. Mm-hmm. And then impromptu was also a lot of fun because you would have 2 minutes to prepare a 5-minute speech on basically anything. And so each round there would sort of be a different theme. So one round there might be generic words. You might have patience, and then you'd give a 5-minute speech on patience. Mm. And so oftentimes you would develop, you'd bring in 3 different examples, whether those be historical or literature or biblical or current events, and build this common theme around patience and present a short but a compelling speech to the judge. And it should be noted on impromptu that you couldn't actually bring in any notes to that. And so you could write down notes on a note card, but you had to leave that down at the table and memorize it.
Hmm. Is it frustrating to you after receiving this training to watch like news stories or interviews? We live in a day and age of sound bites. I heard one person doing a news story said, you know, this was a very, very important issue that we are giving a full 3 minutes to it on the broadcast today. Mm-hmm. And he was serious when he said it. And I thought, 3 minutes, that's about what we get now. Is it frustrating to you to see not only the limited argument that people are actually making for their case, but also young people today, especially having the inability to be able to make their case or make their argument on something?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think that, you know, in talking about the 24-hour news cycle and being able to only devote 3 or so minutes to an important news piece, I think, has made me gravitate towards printed articles because they actually provide more room for analysis and more room for explanation. But certainly when you're watching the news, you know, as a high school debater, you're saying, well, where did you get that information from? And wait a minute, you know, I want to ask you a couple of questions about that. And oftentimes when I'm watching the news with my parents, I'll just start saying, no, I don't think that's the case. And there was one time where an expert supposedly was on from some particular center, and I was thinking, you know, I don't really know about what that person is saying. And so I looked him up on my phone and I said, Mom, I'm not so sure about this guy. And I think that debate has taught me to question people. You don't just accept at face value. And I think that is also a problem that we have in terms of you're not just, you know, only devoting so much amount of time, but also just trusting things that politicians or that supposed experts just automatically say without actually looking into that. And I think that's a very important skill that young people in the NCFCA and in forensics develop, is to make sure to actually investigate something to discover what actually is the truth about this matter. And also recognizing that for a lot of different subjects, particularly policies and current events, things are a lot more complicated than they may seem, and that there isn't necessarily one easy solution, and it isn't necessarily as one-sided as some people want you to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's an important skill that young people have learned to develop, and also just learning to care. I think that's another problem that young people have nowadays is, you know, we're so caught up in social events and celebrities that sometimes we forget about the really important things that are happening around the world. But this teaches young people to be interested, and not only to be interested, but to be excited about it and to be passionate about it and to actually want to get involved themselves. And debate provides that opportunity.
Well, I think that makes for a very good transition to the next phase in your life. Not only was there the phase dealing with NCFCA, but now you're a student, a sophomore at Patrick Henry College. How'd that transition take place? Is that fairly common? Do folks go from NCFCA to Patrick Henry because there's a connection there? Talk about those things.
There definitely is a connection. A lot of people, not a lot of people, but a good percentage of students at Patrick Henry College come from a high school debate background. Many of my friends were involved in the NCFCA. And in fact, actually, the founder of Patrick Henry College, who's now our chancellor, Michael Ferris, was the one that founded NCFCA back in 2000. So there's definitely a strong relationship. My last year in high school, the national championship was held at Patrick Henry College's campus. And I think that's because both NCFCA and Patrick Henry College both are very much about wanting to shape the world and being able to train young leaders up and be able to give them these communication skills, be able to give them analytical skills to go into the world upon graduation from high school or from college and actually be prepared to show the truth and to investigate the truth. And that's something in which the missions are very much parallel. For me personally, I didn't necessarily know that I always wanted to go to Patrick Henry College, but after applying to lots of different schools, after visiting a lot of different schools, I began to realize that my interest in forensics and my love for communications was something that I didn't want to go away. And Patrick Henry College provided the opportunity for me to continue those skills, to be underneath mentors, to be underneath coaches who are very much for the truth, that were also extremely skilled in strengthening my communication skills. I think that, you know, the idea that iron sharpens iron is very much the case in NCFCA, and is also very much the case at Patrick Henry College. And I know that the people I do communications with, that the people I do debate with at Patrick Henry College, very much have a similar mission to the NCFCA.
You know, I opened that broadcast talking about Alfred Snyder, or a.k.a. Tuna, but you actually had some sort of interaction with him, right?
I did, yes. At Patrick Henry College, the form of debate that we participate in is British parliamentary debate. And that is the form of debate that Alfred Snyder, or Tuna, as pretty much everybody in British parliamentary debate knew him as, was so gifted in. And he was extremely prevalent. I go to about 5 to 7 British parliamentary tournaments, and pretty much at every single one, he would probably be there. Mm-hmm. And University of Vermont is an excellent debate program. And the article was very much accurate in that Tuna was all about the truth, and he was all about an open dialogue. While his truth that he believed and that he promoted may not necessarily be what I believe in, or certainly is not conservative Christianity, he was very much about wanting to be able to exchange ideas and have students from around the country, from both liberal schools and from conservative schools and around the world, come together and be able to dialogue about so many different issues, whether those be economic or cultural or social or military. And really be respectful of each other's ideas. And I think that that has been a major impact that he had in British parliamentary debate. Patrick Henry College is very much a conservative Christian school. Mm-hmm. And in the British parliamentary debate circuit, we're very much the minority in that most people are coming from liberal schools, whether they be atheists or agnostic. They certainly don't have our particular belief system. But it's a very respectful arena for discussion. I think that is something very important that a lot of the world is lacking in, that you should be able to listen to the other side. You should be willing to consider the other side, talk about how you differ, find points of agreement, and really work together at finding ways in which you do have common ideas and in recognizing and respecting the reasoning for other people's differing viewpoints.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, what are you looking to do now? What's your course of study, and what are you hoping to do when you graduate from Patrick Henry?
Well, I am majoring in strategic intelligence and national security. I came into school thinking I wanted to do law school, but at this point, I'm not necessarily sure what I exactly want to do. I'm thinking perhaps public policy, perhaps law, or perhaps something in national security. Thankfully, my major doesn't necessarily require going into the intelligence community, although it certainly encourages it, but it focuses on analytical skills that would carry over throughout a wide array of career fields. I'm hoping to end up in Washington, D.C., hoping to work for the government or work closely with the government in some manner of policy or national security.
Excellent. It sounds like you'd be excellent for the position. Julie, let me ask you, we started the broadcast by talking with you, and you were saying that you saw the opening communication training that was taking place there through the debate teams and forensics and so forth. And you said, this would be good no matter what my daughter does. Now, fast forward, through those 4 years, now she's a sophomore at Patrick Henry. What are your thoughts?
I think I made a good choice.
I think so.
But I will tell you that over the course of our involvement in NCFCA, I have seen students go any number of different directions. And I don't think that you should think of this opportunity as something for kids who are destined for public speaking. I've seen kids that, go on toward medical school or in the pastoral world, you just need to be able to communicate in this world and articulate and make a difference. And I think that this is good training for any of those skills.
Tell us a little bit, we only have a few minutes left in the broadcast, but the listening audience, they've been listening to Claire speak, and she speaks so well and really makes her point so well. I'm sure that they're interested in learning more about this. So tell us about maybe some local chapters, or just is there a way for people to get involved here locally?
Okay. Well, I know people are listening all over, so I would encourage them to go to the ncfca.org website, and you can certainly find your state representative, and they can point you in the direction of any number of local clubs that might be available. But particularly in the upstate, we have a wonderful opportunity with the Upstate Area Debate Club, and the best way to contact them is by the email address upstateareadebateclub@gmail.com.
Okay.
And the current administrator of the club would certainly welcome people to come and observe in club one day, point them in the direction of where the debate class would be. We also have a fabulous opportunity coming very close to the upstate at the end of January. and that is a national open for NCFCA. There are only four a year. This one will take place from January 27th to the 30th in Black Mountain, North Carolina, at the Ridgecrest Conference Center. And people are welcome to go on the website, read more about it. They're welcome to come and judge around. It doesn't require any previous experience. In fact, community judges are very welcome and treated like the best of guests at these tournaments, because they provide a means of feedback to the students that is very different from what parents might provide. And so we really, really appreciate when community judges come out and participate.
That's excellent. Well, I commend both of you for what you have done, and just remarkable. What a novel idea, preparing young people for life in this this excellent training that you've received. I think the core thing that I see there, too, is this critical thinking. And, you know, they actually gave us a course in seminary on critical writing. They wanted the pastors to be writing in to newspapers and so forth, and to think through the argument that was being made and then try to rebut that argument or encourage what was being said in that argument and so forth. And I think that that is so necessary. When I watch the news or I hear different interviews or and so forth, even sermons, I'm always kind of critically listening to sermons to see what is being said. It just is astounding to me how often that the case was really not made, that statements were made, but there was no connection to facts, and the case was really not proved in the sermon at all. So I think that this is all very encouraging to know that there's a group of people out there that are doing critical thinking and presentations at this level. Very, very encouraging to hear. Thank you both for being with us today on the program today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks very much.
Okay, let me go ahead and give those websites for our listening audience once again. First of all, I started off with just a news story, and that news story was found out there at the NewYorkTimes.com. And again, it was about the death of Alfred Sinclair, or I'm sorry, Snyder, his AKA Tuna. And then also the websites that we were talking about, one was about the NCFCA.org. You can go out there to find out about them. And then Patrick Henry College. I had the Harris brothers on the radio broadcast. They're a part and went to Patrick Henry College as well. And you can find out more about them at phc.edu. That's phc.edu. Remember this. The Lord Jesus Christ said, He said you shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth. To keep this ministry strong and coming your way, you can make a financial gift at knowingthetruth.org by clicking on the donate button.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.